Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:28 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 10th. I thought we'd kick off today with this chart of the number of new cases of the coronavirus in China, because it is looking increasingly likely that it peaked back in February 4th. And that might seem like an eternity ago, but it's less than a week. And we've seen that there's been a steady decline in the number of new cases. Now, on the one hand, we can look at the data, and there is plenty of evidence to suggest that China has been obfuscating just what exactly the problem is and how large it is. But they would really be, I think, dancing with fire if they were suggesting that the number of new cases was declining when in fact it was increasing. And the number of potential cases is quite large. There was a study from it's a very long name, I'm going to get it wrong, but it was the UK Centre for Exotic Diseases, and what they were saying was that they anticipate that conservatively 5% of the population of Wuhan will probably eventually contract the coronavirus, but the vast majority of those people will have a mild infection. They might not even know they're sick. And that in a population of 10 million means that 500,000 people are going to have this disease. And then, of course, it comes down to the mortality rate, which could be anything from 1% to 5%. Well, 1% to 500,000 is 5,000 cases. 5% would be 25,000 cases of mortality, death from this disease. But that's not really what people are worried about. And the much bigger picture here is, if the number of new cases has already peaked, then we are coming towards the end of this escalation period. Of course, as long as there are new cases, it means that the number of infected is going to continue to increase, but it is decelerating, and deceleration occurs prior to the peak. So when we think about that, then looking at the NASDAQ, for example, the fact that it was able to push on to new high ground in here today, that's why it is pushing on here. It's because the market is already pricing in that the coronavirus issue is in fact over. Now, what we had in China today is a massive infusion of money through the repo system. They added $120-odd billion worth of liquidity through the repo market. And we know what that has done to asset prices in the USA. And it's quite likely to have a very similar effect to asset prices in China. So the Shanghai 300 index has started to firm now from the region of the trend mean, and it continues to unwind the oversold condition following the opening up of the market after the New Year holiday, or the Lunar New Year holiday. Now, obviously, this is a major trend inconsistency, but it is at least bouncing here. Shutting down half the country, quarantining cities like Wuhan, but more recently, over the weekend, they have also started a lockdown in Guangzhou and also in Chengdu. These are major cities. Wuhan is a second-tier city. Guangzhou is a first-tier city, and it's on the coast. It has a massive population, and it's one of the primary manufacturing centers for Guangdong. So that's no small endeavor. But today was also the day where Chinese factories were supposed to be getting back to work. Well, Foxconn has said that they've pretty much told people don't come back. And obviously that is going to have a deleterious effect on production. This is obviously a challenge for a number of businesses. And there are panicky decisions being made right now. So, for example, when we look at the garment manufacturing sector, good friends of mine, they've been looking at the price of fabric that they've been importing from China. It's up over 20% in the last couple of weeks because there has been some panic buying and there's been price gouging going on. We've ample evidence of price gouging, for example, in the sale of masks, and that's also an example of limited supply. But the bigger picture here is if the number of new cases is declining, then the economic impact from the coronavirus, it's certainly going to be deleterious, but probably going to be limited to the first quarter or perhaps some of the second quarter. Of course, in the first quarter, we've already seen that a number of events have been cancelled, that the flight schedule for the vast majority of airlines has been deeply impacted, and there are some major decisions being made about conferences. And of course, conferences are a really quite significant source of tourist revenue. And we've already had some examples of that in our own, in my own personal life, where we've had suppliers reaching out to us for Mrs. Tracy's business and asking if we would be willing to go to Japan rather than meeting them in Hong Kong. And those are the kinds of decisions that people are going to be making. But the reality is that if this is similar to SARS, certainly we have seen that the communicability has really been considerably more, and the instance of some people being infected in France because their a family friend had been at a conference in Singapore, and a number of other delegates had been in at the same conference from China, and they had all shared a buffet lunch, and that had resulted in a number of people contracting the virus and then spreading it all over the world. Well, that's obviously not the kind of story that is going to sit well with consumers. The fact that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people locked up on cruise ships, and that the incidence of infection is growing really quite quickly on board these ships, well, all of that is not great for sentiment. And the economic impact from all of this is certainly going to have a deleterious effect for the first quarter. But that also means that the support mechanisms from central banks and governments is going to be really quite considerable because they don't have much choice. In the event that this is not just a first quarter phenomenon, but a two quarter phenomenon, then they'd be risking recession. And if they refuse to act against this kind of threat, then they are going to run into really quite considerable troubles. So that really suggests that what we're going to see is a very significant monetary and fiscal stimulus. We're already seeing evidence of that in China. That's helping to unwind the short-term oversold condition. The H-share index in Hong Kong has also been firming in here, and it has held the psychological 10,000 level, which is certainly positive. The the renminbi has steadied around the psychological 7 level, and certainly the Chinese are intervening to support the currency around these levels. Then, when we look at what's going on in Europe, the issue here with Germany is the coalition between centre-left and centre-right is being assailed on all sides by populists, and the voter base that is willing to support the government is coming under increasing threat. Generally speaking, the traditional way to deal with an upstart rebellion has been to co-opt them, to bring them into the fold. This was exactly what the US Crown did with upstart Irish rebellions in the 15, 16, and 1700s. They gave them titles, got them to speak English, brought them into the fold, and then co-opted them. This is exactly what's happened in modern politics with coalitions. For example, when the Liberal Democrats, which in opposition had fiery zeal, and they had the they were holding the torch of their the fact that they'd never been in government, so they could never take the blame for anything. That was the thing that got them elected. They were co-opted once they got into power. They had to make the concessions of power, and they were subsequently eviscerated in the polls. Exactly the same thing happened to the Labour Party in Ireland. Now you have this situation in Germany where the centrists are refusing point blank to deal with the upstart far-right party. But of course, if they don't, then that is only going to create going to make them even more aggrieved. Most particularly, the people who voted for them are going to feel completely disenfranchised, and it's going to even further enhance the rationale for voting for them, because they are being disenfranchised, regardless of what their policies are. The smarter thing to do would be to bring them into power and then to co-opt them. That's almost certainly what's going to happen in Ireland, because Sinn Féin has just become the second most well-represented party. And probably the main reason that they're not the biggest party is because they didn't field enough of candidates. So the Irish stock market now is at the upper side of a range that's persisted since 2015, and it does look like we're going to get some pause and consolidation. There is the world of difference between inviting in left-wing populists into the fold relative to right-wing populists. Generally, markets are friendly towards right-wing populists, not so friendly to left-wing populists. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Brazil, the stock market there is rapidly now unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and the weakness of the real, particularly in response to the potential for slowing Chinese economic activity, is I think quite acute, and the real continues to push on to new lows against the US dollar. The reality here is that with the slowdown in China, with the requirement for additional stimulus, both monetary and fiscal, to support growth against that background, then against the additional challenge of upstart revolutionary movements occurring in a substantial number of European but global markets as well, then that pretty much ensures that we're going to have additional spending and additional printing and continually lower interest rates. 10-year yields have been contracting, and they're back around the 150 handle, or 1.5% handle. This is coming pretty close to an area of resistance over the course of the last 6 months. What I thought was quite interesting is the commonality that we see with UK gilts, and the fact that the gilt yield is down to 55 basis points, also approximating the lows in the yields from last year and from back in 2016. But I think the more important point here is that this is not an especially bullish looking chart, and it's going to have to at least sustain a move back above 1% in order to really confirm that we're back in a supply dominated environment. Then when we think about the Australian government bond yield, it's right on the lows around the 1% level, just below it right now. Certainly there's been a pause and consolidation around this area, but the knock-on effect to the economies of suppliers to China in the current environment is probably going to be more exaggerated, and the reliance of Australia and indeed Canada for the for exports to China is, I think, rather acute. What's also interesting is that Australia has got a pretty similar shaped yield curve compared to the USA. So we have this belly in the curve. It's inverted between the 3 month and the 3 year. And it's not quite inverted between the 3 month and the 10 year, but it's a pretty flat yield curve. Now, when we then think about Canada, well, Canada obviously also has a clear dependence on exports to China and as well as exports to the USA. But its yield curve is very clearly inverted. This is a very classic inversion where it's inverted right across every part of the curve. And while we do not have the same reliable lead indicator for other markets from an inversion that we do for the USA, this kind of inversion, it is the kind of thing that should be weighing on financials. But that's not happening. The Canadian financial sector has broken on the upside. I think it is, however, worth highlighting that when we look at, for example, the Royal Bank of Canada, well, that has got a reasonably similar pattern to the financials sector, but it's not breaking on the upside. When we look at, for example, Toronto Dominion, then it's also relatively similar, but it has not broken on the upside. So there is something else that is breaking on the upside to pull the wider financial sector higher, and that's Brookfield. Brookfield as a management has been, I think safely say that it has been one of the biggest beneficiaries of quantitative easing and abundant liquidity. They have got a number of different funds, and their primary policy has been to lock down property assets to secure yields, and that looks like a very prescient decision when bond yields continue to decline. There is no argument with the fact that the pace of the advance has started to pick up since the beginning of 2019. It's gone from 50 to 85 in just over a year. The last time we had anything approaching that kind of speed of advance was heading into the peak in 2015. But this continues to be a very powerful trend, and it is being driven by global liquidity. And this is, I think, one of the biggest takeaways here. It is the big companies and the big private equity companies that are doing most especially well from the provision of liquidity and the continued low interest rate environment. That's also part of the reason why Microsoft is continuing to surge on the upside, and it has done really very well in just the last couple of weeks. But again, here, there is no arguing with the fact that it is accelerating. And even when we look at this on a weekly basis, we can see that the or excuse me, on a logarithmic scale basis on a weekly, we can see how much it has accelerated. It is now very overextended relative to the trend mean. In fact, it could have and still be above the trend mean. And that's pretty meaningful. That does tell us that there's a lot of good news being priced in here, and that there is a clear conclusion among investors, that investors now have got the message. We are in a liquidity-fueled bull market, and as long as we continue to see provision of liquidity, then the biggest beneficiaries of liquidity provision are going to outperform. And that's the kind of very easy narrative that people can understand in seconds and then commit capital to. And that's exactly what we're seeing in this market. It's the foundation of any kind of bubble. And that's what we're getting right now. Central banks have given up on trying to inhibit inflation. They're actively trying to create inflation. They're terrified of deflation. They are terrified of the next recession because they simply do not want to deploy the kinds of extraordinary measures that will be required to deal with it, because it will greatly inhibit the validity of having a central bank at all. And that's something they just, that's a topic they don't want to touch. And therefore, they are going to allow a bubble to inflate in the hope that it will create productivity growth and assist in creating inflation so that they can start to debase the currency. That's the reality of the environment that we're in, and it is the kind of environment that creates bubbly activity. Something that occurred to me over the weekend, which I think is quite, I think it's accurate, and it probably deserves some further exploration. But back in 1997-98 was when long-term capital management went bust. This was a hedge fund that was run by Nobel laureates, and they had algorithms that were a license to print money. And when it went bust, it created a significant scare in the market. And it necessitated that they get bailed out and that interest rates stay lower for longer. And it was that decision to lower interest rates and bail out long-term capital management that created the conditions for the subsequent bubble in 1998 and 99. And I wonder, is the coronavirus today's equivalent of long-term capital management? Is the growth shock that we're seeing today in China the response to the growth shock in China the same as the kind of shock and fear of mistakes and the feeling of necessity to act that drove central bankers to bail out long-term capital management 20 years ago? That's, I think, the big question. Because if we are in fact getting much lower interest rates, much greater fiscal accommodation now, then this kind of acceleration that we're seeing in some of the really big technology shares, that does have the potential to form a bubble. And I think it's worth highlighting that, for example, Microsoft right now has an estimated PE of 33, but it has a market cap of 1.4 trillion, and it has a price to sales ratio of 10. 10 years of sales to justify the price with absolutely no costs taken out of the business is a lot. And this is the kind of valuation that we're looking at in this market right now. So it is 100% dependent on liquidity fuel continuing to push prices higher. And when that liquidity eventually runs out, and it will eventually run out, then we are going to see a very significant correction. But there's just no sign of that right now. The reality is that everyone is terrified of the coronavirus, and it's not as if they have nothing to worry about. But if we're close to the peak, it means that it could easily be a first quarter phenomenon, but that the liquidity fuel that is added to the market as a result of that fear is going to last significantly longer than a quarter. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.